You are listening to Through the Funnel, where we demystify classical Chinese medicine and reveal how Eastern and Western medicine work together in health and healing. I'm your host, Mallory Jaimo, and this is episode 19. Hi, welcome. Today I am joined by my dear friend and fellow Taoist Traditions alumni, Ashley Cooper. Ashley, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, so good to see you, love, and I'm so happy to be here, really.
Yes, this one is really special to me because Ashley had spent several years treating me as a student in our student clinic, but she also treated me once she was a graduate. So she knows many parts of me that I hope to share with you all too in the future. Before Ashley and I jump into our topic of perimenopause and menopause, which is going to be fascinating and a really cool look into Chinese medicine for so many women, so share this with your friends. Ashley can be found in Swannanoa, North Carolina. She's also down in Greenville, South Carolina, with both of her practices, primarily her practice East Acupuncture Wellness is in Swannanoa, and then the second satellite location is in Greenville. She does do acupuncture and herbal therapy for women's health, pain management, and general health. Of course, if you just want to go get acupuncture for anything, Ashley and her team are there for you. Ashley, okay, so big topic, but just give us the general, like, what is perimenopause from an East and a West?
A lot of the times, like, you know, to talk about perimenopause, we kind of have to look at menopause too. So menopause is the cessation of your period for 12 consecutive months. That's the definition, the clinical definition of it. So when you haven't had your period for 12 months, you've graduated to menopause. And that is, you know, a few decades of our lives, hopefully. And some call it also your postmenopausal years after you're maybe a few years into that graduation. Perimenopause is the natural and gentle, sometimes it doesn't feel so gentle, decline of our hormones that happens the year surrounding menopause. So when it happens, you know, is very different for all of us. And there's so many, you know, factors that hopefully we can get into with, like, constitutional and environmental factors and stress and the way, you know, society and geographical factors. But in the US, the median age of menopause is around 51 years old. And perimenopause can really be anywhere as short as 1 to 2 years around your menopause. Or for some people, you know, 10 to 15 years, with the median of, you know, being around a 7 year time frame that your hormones are adjusting. From a Western and Eastern medicine perspective, they're very different. And one of the things I love working with my patients about is really the education of how much this medicine has to offer when it comes to women's health, and especially perimenopause. So in my opinion, from a Western cultural perspective, which then of course impacts our Western medicine, we really see menopause as in terms of loss, right? We're like losing our fertility, we're losing our health, we're losing maybe our visibility or our femininity that so many of us being in this culture kind of experience. And for that, even the word menopause for many people brings on some feelings because of this association with loss. But in Eastern culture and hence Eastern medicine, and this is true in China, and I was doing a little bit of research, and it's fascinating, other cultures, like in Japanese and their word for menopause, and even in like Mayan and indigenous cultures, menopause is not seen in terms of loss. It's actually seen in terms of enhancing our vitality and really something that is celebrated. In Eastern medicine, and cut me off at any moment if I'm blabbing, but some of the concepts to understand in Eastern medicine are the three golden opportunities and the 7 year cycles, because that's really where we talk about perimenopause and how we view it. So the three golden opportunities I find to be important to reflect on, because they are for women or for people with uteruses are these rites of passage, right? Where we're kind of never the same person we were once we go through them. So the three golden opportunities are, the first one's called our heavenly water, which is when we start getting our period. The second one is kind of divided into two, and it's ripening of the fruits and the golden month, which is for those who experience pregnancy and then postpartum. Mm-hmm. And then we have the second spring, which is associated with your perimenopause and your menopause. So these golden opportunities are really just that. They are opportunities in our lives to amend the loss of some resources to really impact our lives. So when we bleed, when we're pregnant, when we're having this natural decline of hormones, we kind of have to amend for that loss a little bit. So there are changes that are happening that we can talk about how to feel better and all of that, but that's where we almost have to pay attention and become a little bit more, more responsible in our health, because the things that we, and you know, so many of our patients and maybe listeners who are listening, it's like a time in our lives where it's like the things we used to be able to do kind of impact us a little bit more, where it's like, oh, I used to be able to drink alcohol, or I used to, you know, be able to exercise a certain way, and out of nowhere things are shifting. So the importance of that is really that we have this opportunity to really help our health, right? And to become, it's like that Spider-Man, with great opportunity comes great responsibility. And I always like to come at this from a place of empowerment, like, and there's so much that we can do to really help and listen to our bodies. And especially with these three golden opportunities, we almost have to talk about all of them when we're just talking about menopause, because standalone, like, the way we treat ourselves or look at our health during our menstruating years are going to impact our perimenopause years. There's that saying of, you know, the 42 days, the way you care for yourself 42 days after giving birth is the way your health is going to look like for the next 42 years. So even though that can be a little like, oh shit, there's great responsibility, but also great empowerment, because it means that we have a lot that we can do to really help be in the best health possible, and in the most empowered place.
Yeah, you've used so many words like opportunity, amend. Something that, a word that came to mind was impact. And what I love so much about Chinese medicine is its ability to look at the beauty of transition and the beauty of discomfort, and to use nature to symbolize those. And something else that came to mind is, we see this, like you said, as a loss, but look at how wise the female body is. Mm-hmm. I mean, that just everything that you talked about with those three golden opportunities and the shifts and the body's ability to adapt and to say, like, this is having an impact on me, whether it's lifestyle, food, coffee, alcohol, you know, stress, to say, like, okay, I've had enough. Now I want to do something else. That is internal. That is the wisdom of the body. And that is such a gift to ignore that and to be frustrated with that or to dismiss that really brings up other things that we can talk about. But it also, to me, shows the strength and that the kidney's energy and that water's energy to get back to what the body wants.
Yeah.
And I'll say to so many of my patients, because we're all up here, you know, we're all in our head, I'll say, it's not what your brain wants. It's what your body wants. And when you're able to listen to the body and follow the body and ask the body and be in commune with the body, that's when you're going to ride that wave of ease and simplicity with everything that's in your life.
Yeah. That strive towards embodiment. And I think about it all the time, you know, in my personal life and in my own healthcare journey, and especially in my patients too, of this. And that one of the things, you know, of course we're biased and this is where we're talking about how much we love this medicine, but like, it really does help us put us in our body, but in a really safe and nurturing way. That's like, hey, this is maybe what it's saying. And instead of being, you know, and it's okay, of course, to be frustrated and it sucks to feel crappy and, you know, hot flashes and sleep and all the things that we'll get into with the symptoms, but it's also your body's innate wisdom to be like, hey, something's not right. And it's so important to just listen a little bit, you know?
Yeah, listen, tune in, and have that conversation. So tell us, what are some symptoms? What are some of those green flags, we'll say, to give the go-ahead to shift?
The ones I commonly see, sleep disturbances is a big one. Mood, you know, whether that be an increase in anxiety, an increase in depression, or really just our way that we used to be able to handle stress kind of shifts a little bit. And that's, again, part of that message that, you know, things are shifting and we maybe need to shift along with it. Of course, you know, the good old hot flashes and night sweats, migraines, a lot of the times will reappear for people that maybe experienced them in their like teenage years, are experiencing them again, or acne or these other, and I'll get into maybe why that is with the second puberty aspect of what's happening. But, you know, definitely irregular cycles, whether that be like heavier, more painful cycles, the good old brain fog of, you know, what was that word? And just feeling a whole little more fuzzy, weight gain. And, you know, our metabolism does slow down a little bit. And so much of that has to do with, again, our adrenals and our insulin. And then pain and inflammation, which is one that I didn't always associate with perimenopause. And then I started seeing it a lot in my patients and experiencing it myself, where it's like, oh, stuff just hurts a little bit more than it used to. But one of the things when it comes to symptoms, what I appreciate about perimenopause is that it really is like a barometer of our health. So for example, if we've already been having sleep issues, or we haven't maybe been having the best sleep hygiene, we're going to definitely maybe experience more sleep disturbances. Or if, you know, we're maybe deficient in certain minerals, then we might experience more vaginal dryness if we don't have zinc or these different things. So it's almost, what I love about that aspect of it is that basically to treat the perimenopausal symptoms is what you needed anyways, right? We needed to kind of recalibrate that brain or have extra supplementation or on, herbal recommendations that not are only helping the symptoms, but are what your body was needing all along as well.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So you went through the symptoms from Western side, and from my ears and what I see with patients is there's a lot of heat. There's, which is creating that restlessness, but also the heat that we know, which is going to be the hot flashes and the discomfort and the sleep disturbances. That's all heat that we would say in Chinese medicine.
Or the dryness. The heat.
Yep. The heat drying it out. Yep. Creating that dryness, which then leads me to the deficiencies. So those deficiencies, like you said, the dryness, even like the weight gain can be considered a deficiency, the brain fog. So we've got heat and we've got deficiency. Are there any other terms that you want to bring in from a Eastern side that we're probably going to be talking about more, just to familiarize our audience with?
I'm definitely guilty of this, where it's like, you know, we generalize a little bit, but I think one of the beautiful aspects of this medicine is that someone will come in with, you know, said symptom, and it doesn't always particularly mean this pattern, right? So that's the beauty of that diagnosing, that will take into account all your symptoms with your pulse, with your tongue, and then be like, oh, okay, these are the patterns that I am seeing, that is just your body's own way of kind of getting out of balance, and we can kind of help it get back into balance or in the best balance possible. In general, yin deficiency is a very common one that we do see. And I do, you know, as women, we are more yin in nature. So that's kind of part of experiencing our hormones are yin. So of course we're going to, as our hormones decline, that's kind of part of that yin deficiency. But the kidneys being so intertwined, as we know, with the kidney yin and yang, it's like the moment one becomes deficient, the other. So I see a lot of yang deficiency too, in conjunction with yin deficiency, which is why textbook, and we do have yin and yang deficiency herbal formulas, luckily, but you know, many people aren't just one or the other. So you might have the dryness symptoms, but you might also have some of the yang deficiency symptoms of the fatigue, which is a big one, or some more swelling, loss of libido, the brain fog, all of that is kind of a little bit more of that, like the fire in your body. It's actually can be a little bit deficient as well. And then of course, when we have deficiency, that can then create excess, of course. So for many people, blood stagnation is a big one, especially for, you know, people who've experienced maybe painful periods or have fibroids. That's like, and one of the things that acupuncture does in regulating hormones is just getting the blood flow, right? That's part of our principle, is just circulation flow. So there's a lot we can do to just like reinstate function there by getting things to flow again. And dampness, of course, you know, when we're deficient, and the yin deficiency dampness I find so fascinating, which there's like that classical formula that we all learn in school, the Lu Wei and all of their modifications. But for so many people, when you're yin deficient, you think, okay, you don't have enough of your fluids in your body. So your body tries to do what it can. So it's like, oh, great, I'll just hold on to whatever fluids I can. And then that's what creates that dampness. So then not only are you deficient, but you're lugging around this extra fluid in your body that you can't get rid of. And that is such a common thing I see as well, is the yin deficiency with the dampness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the body's trying to make up for, like you said, lost resources. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And thank you for defining that too, the difference between just yin and yang in that simplicity, because one is like the other and they work together. And so that yang is the simplest thing, is going to think about the energy and the heat. And then the yin, as Ashley mentioned, is more the calming, cooling, feminine energy, and that water element. And either or can get built up and burnt out. And that's what happens in as we progress towards menopause and perimenopause. So you kind of alluded to it, but let's talk a little bit now in a Western side, hormonally, what happens, and if you can take us through how then the Eastern lens is. So like, what is estrogen? Is estrogen yin or yang? Is progesterone yin or yang? Talk us through how these hormones.
Ooh, I love it. Okay. See if I can rein it all in. So from a Western medicine perspective, one of the things I've loved in researching and, you know, wanting to know more about hormones is that for so many of us, we do think it's like, oh my God, our hormones are going crazy. And it's just this like crazy fluctuation. But there's a great book called The Hormone Repair Manual that I love. And she basically describes in this book that it's not this crazy fluctuation of hormones. It's actually a very like series of events that happens. So it's, and with that education, and I think it's so important to kind of be understanding what's happening, because then we have more of that power to be like, oh, this is why I'm feeling this certain way. So we don't feel so powerlessness to it. So some people in the Western world call it our second puberty, which I like the idea of it, because it's almost like our second spring, in the sense that our first puberty, we were not ovulating every month. Maybe we started getting our period and then we didn't get into the cycles of seven, but maybe we can touch on that at some point. But for the first 7 years of your menstruating, you're almost like learning what that feels like to menstruate. So you're not ovulating every month. And our body mostly produces progesterone through ovulation. So in your first puberty, when you're first getting your period or your heavenly water, you have lower progesterone with higher estrogen. And that's what causes a lot of the symptoms of, you know, headaches or acne or kind of mood irregularity. And so during our perimenopause years, the exact same thing is happening, but kind of in reverse, where because our bodies are super smart and they are designed to go through this process, your body starts being like, oh, wait, I don't need to be ovulating every month. Like, I am wasting all these resources. I am giving all this time and energy into reproduction, which is not a sustainable state. Why don't I use them elsewhere? And this is where a lot of the, in my opinion, the spiritual transformation of perimenopause comes from, because it's like you get this renewed energy or second spring, because you can now have these resources to use in other parts of your life, not just about nourishing life outside, you know, children, career, was all of that. So your second puberty or perimenopause, you're not ovulating every month. So you have lower progesterone. And then your estrogen is, not only is it more in comparison to your progesterone. But I almost always envision this little like fireworks show going on where, you know, it's like at the end of a fireworks show, you're like, oh, the beep, 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 beep. I feel like that's what our body's doing with estrogen, where it's like giving it like the last little hurrah of like, oh, give it all you got. And so the research actually shows that we, during our first few years of perimenopause, our estrogen can be as three times as high as it was during our normal menstruating years. That's what's happening at first. And then after you completely stop bleeding, because, you know, for many of us, there'll be a few years of, you know, not getting a period. And then you think you're like, okay, this is going to be it. And then, you know, 10 months will go by and you'll get one. And then you're right back into that waiting room area of waiting and to go into menopause. But once you get that final period, your estrogen will decline. But, you know, there's a lot of different schools of thought with this. And I always tell my patients that I definitely don't think there's a right or wrong, and you have to kind of do what's right for you. But in my view, you're never really deficient in estrogen. You just have lower estrogen. And that is something that your body is designed to go through. Just like the first 14 years of our life, let's say, without having a period, we had lower estrogen. Now this other chapter in our life, we have lower estrogen, but our body continues to produce estrogen, right? Like our heart cells will still produce estrogen, which will help with like heart protection. Our bones will produce estrogen. So, you know, that's just my view on, which we can get into hormonal replacement therapy if need be, but like, you know, you do have less estrogen and it's something that you need to counteract. But what I find super, super fascinating is that this is where Eastern and Western medicine kind of align. So when we're starting to have lower progesterone, your body's like, okay, cool. Like, we're not going to ovulate anymore. We're going to use those resources elsewhere. But your body was also accustomed to a certain amount of progesterone, and hormones, you know, can help things feel in balance. So your body, and smart as it is like, okay, great. I'm going to start pulling a little bit of progesterone from my adrenals, which in Chinese medicine, when we talk about the kidney systems, we talk about the kidneys and the adrenals, right? And our kidneys house our jing, which is our essence, or it's our reserve, our energy. It's what we came into this life with from our ancestors and parents. And, you know, throughout our lives, we use up our jing, but Chinese medicine has a really strong emphasis on preserving and kind of caring for our jing, right? Because unfortunately, we don't know how much jing we have in this life. Like, did we come in super rich, or, you know, having to budget every month? So the more we care for our jing, the better. So your body will start pulling a little bit from your reserves or from your adrenals to make up for this loss of progesterone. But what I find fascinating here is that we've been pulling from our reserves for most of us because of our lifestyle, because of our cultural context, and because of the high stress that we live, we kind of don't have that much reserve. So a lot of the symptoms that we're experiencing with perimenopause isn't because of the decline of hormones, although that can be a part of it. It's really because of our lack of reserves that we've been pulling from all along. And, you know, your body will perceive, you know, definitely emotional stress, but under eating is a form of stress, trauma, not great sleep hygiene, all of these things that, you know, we can't not live stress, but these prolonged periods of stress can really hurt our reserves. So then when it's actually time to start using a little bit of them to help with mitigating the change, your body is doesn't have that much to give, which is one of the things I love teaching, you know, the younger little ones, that, you know, there's a lot, and there's still things that we can do, of course, to, you know, replenish our resources and make sure that we're, you know, helping our stress. But, you know, there's a lot that, and I love how this conversation is being had so much more and more by younger generations, and by learning to, you know, learn your cycles and what to do when you're on your period versus not, because that's all about preserving that jing.
Yeah. And I love that you brought up the, and we talked about this before, but environmental factors and choices that we make. You know, personally, I was a coffee drinker for not long, maybe like 10 years, but I was sucking that stuff down and I was drinking it all the time. And then I probably, yep, which creates a lot of heat in the system, yeah, and agitates the liver and then dries you out. And I think it was when I was like 33, 34, my body was like, no, we are going to disturb your sleep. We are going to make you agitated. We're going to dry you out. And I'm like, what is going on here? And it didn't take me long to be like, oh, well, duh, coffee and chocolate. I was also just like, on chocolate. And as soon as I was able to wean myself off of the caffeine, my body just took a huge inhale. And then it started to ask for things like, we probably won't get into too much detail about this, but minerals and vitamins like magnesium and zinc that coffee depletes. There's plenty of research that if you drink coffee, it's going to completely deplete you of these minerals. And all while on top of that, I was starting a business, working all the time, thinking all the time. I was in a new, relatively new city, grew up in this area, but it was just like that hamster wheel of what you're talking about, adrenals, go, do that. Immediately we think like, oh, burnout, let me just take a break. But we have to change those lifestyle habits too. And then people would say that I would talk to is like, oh, you're getting close. It's like, oh, no, I do not believe that. And so that's something that I want you to talk about too. And I want to mention is like, you know, younger girls in their mid 30s to even like mid 40s, you know, they're like, oh, perimenopause. I'm like, no, quit drinking the coffee, quit, you know, waking up at 5 a.m. because someone told you that you had to, when really you just want to get up at 7 with your kids.
I do think, you know, and it is, I think one of the frustrating things is that we all, you know, and I think listening to professionals and research and all of this is part of it, but also the importance of, again, listening to our bodies, right? And maybe what works for me isn't what works for you. And the more we can try things out and come at it from a place of curiosity, as someone who practices Chinese medicine that talks about this stuff all day long, like I still want the quick fix, right? I'm like, oh, what do I do to feel better right now? But really the foundational changes of like, how am I eating? How am I sleeping? How am I connecting with people out in the world? And how am I moving? It's like, we always want to move past the most foundational things to kind of get to the, like, you know, Instagram new powder that's going to solve everything, which maybe will help. Great. But really kind of getting to that foundation of listening to our bodies again, which is, I think, the most empowering place that we can come at it from, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Back to progesterone and estrogen. So estrogen is yin, progesterone is more yang. Yep. Yeah. So tell us about that. And then tell us about the transition into, I'm trying to, this second spring and what happens hormonally.
Yeah. So, you know, it's fascinating because yin and yang is, you know, interdependent, and it, you know, something is yin in relationship to something else. So in general, if you split up like your menstrual cycle, right, your first half is like your yin, and then their second half is your yang. And so estrogen is more yin, even by its properties of what it does of like building the lining and helping with our tissues. And then yang is more progesterone. I mean, progesterone is more yang, as it's more of like the warming aspect, more of the luteal phase hormone. But it's also fascinating because in general, both progesterone and estrogen can be viewed as your yin sex hormones. And then you have things like DHEA and cortisol, which is actually, those are super yang in comparison. So it's always kind of in comparison, but it's a great way of mixing the two to kind of really understand their properties.
Yeah. And testosterone too can get thrown in there as well.
Yeah. And that's the, you know, hormones, which I think we all know this to be true, but I really try to remind myself is that they don't operate in a vacuum, right? So it's like, it's a beautiful little symphony that they're all constantly just communicating with each other. So even labs where it's like, you do a little snapshot of like, oh yeah, your LH is fine, your FSH, like that's a little snapshot and it's not really showing the whole big picture. So to really, you know, doing cycle mapping type, more urine testing or things that are actually showing more of the communication between the hormones is so important because you can't just look at estrogen and be like, oh, it's in this range, or progesterone. You have to really see it, the communication between all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what we're talking about here now is the blessing that Chinese medicine is going to be giving this world. Is I really feel like Chinese medicine is just going to come in with its cape saying like, we got you, because it does female transitions so well. And just like you're saying, it takes into consideration everything that you're experiencing, from your lifestyle to what you're eating to the supplements that you're taking to how you're sleeping to how your pulse is moving, your symptoms. It looks at you as an individual and everything that you're experiencing and everything that can be contributing to your experience and why it tends to be a little bumpy at certain times, whether you're a female who's just starting to menstruate or you're a woman who's going into the specific cycle that we're talking about. And I just don't think Western medicine has that larger scope yet. There's a lot of information that, as we're talking about, that they provide us, and I will never ever deny any sort of lab or imaging. I love them so much, but like you're saying, it's just a teeny tiny little piece, and we need that, but we need so much more.
Absolutely. And the importance, you know, of like reinstating function, which is one of the things that I love about this medicine too, whether it be with acupuncture or with herbs, or even when we're recommending lifestyle recommendations, it's not just about like, oh, let's get your progesterone up, or let's, which is part of it, but it's really about like, how can we make your body maybe ovulate so that you are producing progesterone, or how do we, you know, make your body make yin instead of just giving you yin, which is, you know, sometimes what hormone replacement therapy is. It's like, how do we create the balance in your body to reinstate that function, which is, you know, that root cause medicine instead of just treating the symptom. I think that's where that really comes from, is by reinstating the function of our bodies when we're in balance.
So let's talk about that a little bit. How do we as Chinese medicine practitioners reinstate that balance?
You know, herbs, of course, play a huge role when we talk about hormones, because hormones are yin in nature, and herbs are more yin than acupuncture, being a little bit more yang, because it's more about substance, right? And whereas acupuncture might be a little bit more about that function. So, you know, there's a lot of herbal formulas, depending that whether it be low libido or those hot flashes that we would prescribe. Again, even with the heat, like, we have points that clear heat from your body, right? So it's not just, which can not only obviously be causing things like hot flashes, but might also be causing your anxiety or your insomnia. So in theory, one point would treat all of your symptoms, right? So there's just a lot that we can do to work in harmony with your body, basically through acupuncture and herbs and lifestyle. Like, I love the, you know, back in the day where it's like, you would first go to lifestyle changes, right? How are you eating? How are you moving? How are you coping with stress? And then when those things weren't working, you would then turn to medicine, which would be acupuncture and herbs. You know, it's okay to turn to acupuncture and herbs, or even any type of what you find healing with lifestyle, but you almost, again, can't not do the lifestyle part, which is the good, bad news. Maybe we can make your shoulder better, but for like stuff to really stick and for, again, to reinstate that function, it does take some participation, which is the beauty of it, you know?
Yeah. And that's part of the second spring, is planting those seeds and taking care of them and watering it and allowing it to grow and prosper in the soil that you're nurturing, instead of just planting the seed and willing it to grow and standing over it, looking at it like a grump, or, you know, just going and buying a big old plant that's, you know, already been, which is next to impossible with what we're talking about. But
Whole idea with the second spring, what I love about it is that, you know, we go through these seasons in a year, right? Like our spring and our summer, but we also go through these seasons in our lives. In Chinese medicine, we talk a lot about like your first two cycles of seven, from 0 to 6 and 7 to 14, are what we call your spring year. So these are, it's all about growth, and it's all about like using this new energy that we have to like learn the world around us. And then, you know, puberty, we move into what's called our fire element, which is associated with the summer, which might be a little bit more about connection and intimacy, like how do we interact with the world around us and getting to know ourselves. And then our 20s and our 30s are earth years, where we might be all about kind of nourishing our careers, our children, our family life. And it's all kind of about like that late summer bounty. Mm-hmm. But the idea with the second spring is that we are experiencing this new surgence of energy, which is against that enhanced vitality. And one of the things I love to remind myself when I'm feeling a little bumpy, or my patients as well, is that, you know, menopause is actually about slowing down aging. It's our body's innate wisdom that's actually like, oh, wait, like, let's reallocate these resources. And so that we have this second spring, and so that we have this language around it that feels like something we want to go through, right? Like, shit, I want that, you know, resurgence of energy. I want to feel like a little kid again, or even a better version, because now we maybe, you know, have a little bit more of our more understanding of the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the gifts of menopause, you know, and of perimenopause, of this what can be turbulent time, but it really is a reallocation of resources to use it for things that we want to use it to.
The body's ability to consolidate, which is such a Chinese medicine word, to not only bring in the resources that we need, like we've talked about, but also to consolidate where we're giving externally that maybe we don't want to, or this person's an energy suck, or I don't want to spend my time doing that anymore. I always find it interesting to go along with this theme is how people will talk about when kids leave, parents become empty nesters. Well, what are you going to do to nourish your nest? And how does that look for you? Because all that energy was so much going outwards and into the earth, and even being generated by the fire and the adrenals and the kidneys, trying to keep up and do and, you know, be a good parent and provide for your offspring.
I find that that's one of the destabilizing things of perimenopause, because it does force us to maybe answer those questions of like, who am I maybe without being a mother? Like, you're still, you know, maybe always going to be a mother or a wife or a career person, but it's like really getting to know who you are and these deeper questions. And the reason for that from a Chinese medicine perspective is that like 35 years old, which is like your fifth cycle of seven, you go from what's called your earth bears metal. So we're moving from our earth years, which is the late summer, which is maybe all about like nourishing and things outside of ourselves, to the metal energy, which metal is, you know, all about refinement and like that reflection of like, wait, what am I doing? Like, is this actually working? What do I need to let go of? And like you were saying, you know, just kind of letting go of all the, you know, stuff we've accumulated to kind of get down to the core of like, who are we without all of that? And that can be hard,
mm-hmm.
it can be very, especially when you're experiencing these physical symptoms as well. And, you know, and that's what I love about the idea of this perimenopause, that it's not only a hormonal shift, it's also a psychological shift. And that's, you know, you can only treat one, but I think it's so beautiful when you can work on the linear scientific, okay, what is happening? Let's make sure that we have, you know, enough minerals, and we're doing our magnesium, and we're, you know, doing our adaptogens to help our adrenals. But what are we also doing for that Shen, or that spirit that now has this resurgence of energy, that they say, you know, the chi that was going to our uterus can now go to our Shen or our spirit to kind of help us a little bit more with some of the more spiritual aspects of our lives.
That's marrying the physical with the mental, emotional, the spiritual, the psychological. It's allowing them to be in harmony, maybe in a different way that some people haven't experienced before, haven't made room to experience. And it's that heart-kidney connection. It's the heart, which is fire, and the water, which is the kidneys, and really keeping them together to be able to allow for the smoothness of those hormones to find their new home and their new way of being. Oftentimes, when I see women that are really rigid throughout this process, it makes it sometimes more difficult. And what I love so much about acupuncture, that I know so many people don't think about acupuncture in this way, but how it's helped mentally, how it can and does and will help mentally, emotionally with the burdens and the emotional experiences that we have around life. It can really lift those from us and help us to see them in a different way and transform them within us so that we're able to metabolize them in a new way.
We can't change always maybe the circumstances or the stressful situations in our lives, but how we adapt to them, how we resonate with them, how, you know, that's is one of the gifts of acupuncture. That's like, oh wow, it's like the same amount of stress, you know, and as for many of us in the stage, whether it be like caring for ailing parents or, you know, or children and the stress of all of that, like the stress is going to be there. But again, how, you know, how we're able to work with our environment and our nature around us and being and in tune with that is a beautiful aspect of this medicine. Absolutely.
So I love acupuncture because it takes the pressure off of the body. It helps us to regulate. I like to say, you know, if your train is going one way, then we help to like ease it into another way. And then you talked about herbs, which is just such a beautiful complement to acupuncture because the principles are going to be the same. Treatment, diagnoses are going to follow the same. So tell us, when you see someone in this situation, you know, we've talked a lot about like lifestyle and acupuncture and herbs, but then when they're leaving your office, where do you go? Where do you take them? What are some suggestions that you send them home with? And I know we're talking general, so if you want to bring in like a specific case or
I think a few general things that, you know, one of the things from a Western medicine perspective that they start looking at a lot when with hormones is kind of the idea of a circadian rhythm, right? So they'll say like managing our cortisol and melatonin will kind of, again, work with all of our hormones and make sure that things are in balance. From a Chinese medicine perspective, I love looking at the organ clock, which is, you know, this, our version of our circadian rhythm, where we have these 2 hour time increments where the qi and blood is flowing through a particular organ, which means that, you know, that's when the functions of that organ are put on spotlight or highlighted. So it's almost when we want to be doing things in that time to really be working with our bodies. And then, you know, there's the whole 12 hours opposite from that is when it's at its weakest. So there's so many things that we can do to help with our own circadian rhythm. So, you know, starting with the sleep and wake cycles, I think are really easy for people because it does like put the intention into the day if you're starting a certain way. So, you know, one of the things I always tell people to, you know, hone in and be like, what works for you. But, you know, in Chinese medicine from 7-11 a.m. is the earth element time, the spleen and stomach. So having a breakfast, making sure that you're having, you know, maybe food before having your coffee. If you're having coffee, the importance of that is tremendous in our metabolism, but also our overall health. And same thing, the from 11 to 1 and 1 to 3 is that liver gallbladder time or gallbladder liver time, which is associated with the spring. So for so many people, if they're not asleep by 11, then you kind of have that second wind and that liver gallbladder starts going like, ooh, let me think about all the creative projects I want to do. And the problem there is that the liver gallbladder needs to be sleeping to kind of do its function of restoring and revitalizing. So, you know, having a breakfast is a big one. You know, in Chinese medicine, we're pretty big on having a warm cooked breakfast because that will help your digestive fire. And then going to sleep by 11 is really, really important. And kind of how you were talking about with some of the boundaries issues of like, I always ask my patients to, instead of what you can do more of, what can you do less of? Because that's part of that yin and yang. So for so many of us, we want to maybe do something, which is important, but like also what can you do less of is a huge part of that lifestyle design of maybe, you know, toxic relationships or whether that be this expectation we have on ourselves to be freaking superhuman and be able to, you know, we have to kind of be like, oh, our bodies are tired. Like I love the whole, I tell my people sometimes of like, you know, they're trying to figure out why they're tired. And yes, they might be yang deficiency, it might be damp, or it might just be that your body's tired, you know, like it could be that simple. And sometimes the more we pay attention, the more it's like, oh, I actually need to rest a little bit. So I'm a big fan of that. Movement, breathing exercises, you know, again, it's like those super foundational, like, oh yeah, I'm so grateful that we don't have to necessarily think about breathing. Obviously as humans, it just autonomic and does it. But because of that, so many of us actually don't learn how to breathe. So really, you know, getting some breathing exercises can help. From a Chinese medicine perspective, right? We have that lung kidney relationship too. So the more we're really breathing into our kidneys and having that full breath down to our adrenals can really help impact our adrenal health, which will then, you know, help all of the things that we've been talking about as well.
Yeah. To piggyback off of what you're saying, I'll suggest at night, write down the things that you want to accomplish tomorrow. Write down the things that haven't been finished. Brain dump is a really common term, and just get the yang out of your brain onto paper so that your brain can go, oh, if I need it, it's right there. And that's a really nice activity to be able to say, okay, I'm going to prepare, because as you move into this cycle of life, part of it is nurturing that metal element. And the metal likes to be prepared, and they like to be very linear and have things in order. And so when we do something like that before we go to bed, especially for women that have a lot going on, it's much easier for the body to relax, because when the body doesn't have to hold on to information, then the body can settle down and be with itself instead of all the information that's in its head. And then as well to that, you know, when waking up, because you're waking up in metal time, I love myself and love to recommend to get up, get some water, you know, da da da, do whatever, get yourself going, and then breathe, stretch, set a timer, spend some moments with your body before you start to use it and ask it to do things, to get it into this place of connection, of breathing, of stretching, of opening, of expansiveness, because that's what we're going to be doing when we go into this world. We're going to be bringing ourselves and our full self and feeling that in our own body, especially since one of the symptoms that you mentioned around this transition is the achiness, the creakiness, the swelling. It's like, well, stand and bounce for 15 seconds and then touch your toes and do some lunges and really get that chi circulating, that dampness, that heaviness, that fluid congestion.
Of, you know, movement, of course, as it sparks life and we all need movement. But I always also tell my patients of the importance of, like, because we're in this place of preservation, right? That, like, the importance of, like, these longevity type exercises, right? Yeah. Whether like Qigong or good old stretching, or, you know, yes, we need weight bearing exercises, absolutely, because that will help our joints, but just walking and all these, like, more longevity type exercises that don't spike our cortisol levels or don't necessarily feed that, like, stress, you know, fight or flight, like, it's just anything we can do to settle our nervous system is the most important, which is not always easy to do, you know, because we're kind of, for many of us, trapped in this little, you know, hamster wheel.
Yep. And one of the best things to regulate your nervous system, to take you out of fight flight, to settle, to get you used to being in your body, is acupuncture.
Girl, preach. I ain't gonna fight you on that.
I want to state the obvious here. If you haven't tried it, go and try it. I mean, it's just going to pop the balloon in your body. It's phenomenal.
Yeah,
Ashley,
some people don't realize that. Like, it's kind of the cherry on top, right? Like, we'll be working on the, again, in reinstating the function and doing all these things. But, like, how nice is it that you're just also, your nervous system can get into that, you know, rest and digest of just like, oh, okay, I got this. You know, it doesn't have to feel as overwhelming, which it can be hard to be human. So,
Ashley, we have a few more minutes here. I know we can talk and talk, and you'll definitely be back. But you mentioned hormone replacement therapy, and I know a lot of people listening are going to be like, what are they going to talk about that? How can you leave without talking about that? So take us a little bit through some, HRT.
You know, these are my thoughts, and some of it is based off of course, my research and my understanding, but, you know, I don't, first and foremost, it doesn't have to be either or, right? For so many people, it's like, okay, I'm either going to just do the acupuncture and the herbs or all this lifestyle design. Like, you can choose to do both. And I appreciate the conversations that's being had around hormone replacement therapy, right? There's all this newer research that's actually being done by women, which is so important. And maybe some of the prior research wasn't as accurate as far as like the scariness of hormone replacement therapy. So I think there's truth to that. I particularly, again, coming from a Chinese medicine perspective, which is where I'm always going to come from it, I don't love some of the conversations that's being had around the fear of like, oh my God, we don't have estrogen, we need it. And it's like, we're going to have heart disease and we're going to have osteoporosis and we're going to have all these dementia. And again, our bodies are designed to go through this transition and there's things that we can do to help smooth out. So for a lot of my patients, first try the herbs, try the acupuncture, try this lifestyle design, because that's really going to get to the root of helping balance it. And if if people choose to do hormone replacement therapy, obviously please have it be, bioidentical and, people who get put on birth control to regulate their hormones, like that's not progesterone, it's the synthetic version of progesterone, which doesn't do what our bodies need it to do. The importance of bioidentical, but from a Chinese medicine perspective, you're either going to be on it forever, or you're going to have to come off of it at some point and then kind of go through all of these shifts again. So, and in our view, when you put these exogenous hormones in your body, it almost lazies our own chi, right? So it's like people who take constant laxative, for example, your intestines are going to be like, cool, you got this. I don't have to do it on my own. And the same thing with the hormones is that it's instilling something that's not necessarily making your body produce it or helping with the transition of it. So I always come at it from a place of there's no right or wrong. You got to do what's right for you, but try not to be fearful. Again, this is a very natural phase of your life. And I always try to remind my people that it is just that, it's a phase. It won't last forever. This, maybe some of these uncomfortable symptoms that you're having aren't going to last forever. And there's things that we could do with supplements, with acupuncture, with herbs, with, our checking in on our reserves and how our adrenals are doing, all of these things we've talked about to mitigate it. But again, from a Chinese medicine perspective, exogenous hormones can cause a lot of dampness and because they're cold. So then that can just create a little bit sludgier problems down the road. So it's no either or, but I don't think everyone needs it. And I don't think it should be the go-to of like, oh, wait, I'm having less hormones. Let me, get some hormones. Because again, your body's designed to go through this. So that's my two cents on my little podium.
Yeah. And I agree with you. A lot of what I've read is HRT is corn and soy. It's GMO corn and soy. And there's a lot that is involved in GMO herbicides and pesticides, and even those that are lab grown hormone replacement and things that are made in a lab are not natural. And when you take excess corn and soy, you're building excess dampness in the body. And when Ashley and I talk about dampness, it's that heaviness, it's that sludge, it's that excess weight, it's that inability to feel full in yourself and maybe have that yang rise to the head where you're able to think clearly. It does create this weighed down type of feeling. And I, like yourself, I'm not against HRT. I tell women, do what you want to do and we can do both of them. But as you mentioned, which is such a really good point, that it may help in the short term, but think about how it's going to feel when you start the transition off of them, or what you're going to need to do as you, again, bridge that gap that inevitably is going to happen unless you're going to be on them, quote unquote, forever, which I don't recommend, because that right away to me just says we might be creating some other problems and some other disharmony in the body. And I do want to mention that the herbs that Ashley and I speak about are Chinese medicine herbs. They're formulas that have been around for thousands of centuries. They're plants. We're talking about trees, barks, berries, roots, limb branches, and even food, like ginger and cinnamon and turmeric.
Yam.
yep, yam. And so you're looking at, and one of the side note here, one of the bioidenticals that they use in HRT is yam, you know, so they're trying to lab make yam because they see how the Chinese have used it to preserve health and to help women. And
the idea of naturally, like herbs that mimic, right? Like that's what I love about, like, you know, these herbs that mimic progesterone in our body, or maybe because they're not putting progesterone in your body, but it's almost giving that, if you think I can think about this, where when your body gets these things that feel like progesterone, your body's like, oh, I kind of like that. Let me do it on my own. You know, it's almost kind of these nudges that are, again, reinstating that function, whether, you know, and there, we can have a whole hour debate on Vitex and Chase Berry and, you know, all of that, but that is an herb that can mimic progesterone, and that's why it's used, but it's not this exogenous external hormone. It's almost helping our bodies be able to make it on its own for as long as it can, you know, or again, helping our reserves be able to, you know, have more to pull from, or.
Yeah. And I love Dr. Chen and Chen's book, Formulas and the Herbs book, because he went through every single herbal formula and herbs, which there's over 500 of them, and said, this contains phytonutrients, this contains the CY protein. I mean, he detailed these out. And so to your point, like, they are food and they are giving us vitamins and minerals and nutrition for our body to then be able to make the hormone. And that's where people skip that step. And I think Western medicine skips that step, is it's really the root is the vitamins and minerals that then create the action of the hormones or the period coming for girls that don't have a period. You know, what do we need to do to get those going? Well, what vitamins and minerals are you deficient in that then the herbs are going to be the catalyst to help your body start drumming that up again?
Well, it's looking at the precursors of things, right? Like instead of like maybe supplementing with GABA, like supplement with magnesium and taurine and these things that then will help the GABA in your brain. And the same thing with Chinese medicine. It's like, we're always kind of looking at like where things were, where they are and where they're going. So in the sense of like that preventative piece of like how much work we can do to help not only prevent illness, but also how, what you were saying just got me off on this spiral about the, like the going to the before, you know, like if we just kind of always are chasing that carrot.
Ashley, we lost you there for a second, but I think we understood what was being said is the Chinese medicine approach to really treat what's the cause, what's the root. Before we let you go, you've left us with really good information and lots of tips, but is there anything else that you want to add or say or share that hasn't already been said?
Even though it might be common for many of us to be experiencing symptoms, we shouldn't normalize it in the sense of like, we don't have to suffer. There are ways to help mitigate this change. But I would also invite people, which I might have, you know, kind of, this is my take on this, that it is a rite of passage, right? And this is a beautiful time in our lives to question things and again, reallocate our resources. So as much as, you know, talking about the symptoms is important, and again, like getting to the root of taking herbs and supplements that can help with this turbulent time, the importance of also embracing this beautiful time in our lives, that our value isn't tied to our reproductivity, our value isn't tied to our youthful skin and dewy hair that's starting to dry out or whatever. Like, I think the more we embrace our innate beauty and our innate wisdom, like, you know, we're freaking unstoppable. Like, there's so much. I was reading this book that was talking about, you know, the evolution of menopause and how we're one of the few species that evolved to have decades of our lives be without reproduction. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, to re-question maybe some of the societal stuff around us, which is part of, you know, the lives we live. And there's, you know, we can't all go to the middle of the jungle and live off grid. Like, we're gonna, you know, be living the lives we live. And there's still that innate wisdom of our bodies to honor this time and to honor ourselves and to have these conversations, to destigmatize them, to take out the shame out of, which is one of the things I love that, you know, this is being talked about more and more, and, you know, let's keep talking about it so that not only for us, but for future generations and, you know, empowerment of people all around the world to get to know their bodies more.
Thank you for saying all of that. And if we look at the classics, part of creativity and reproduction, they're always paired together. And so I will encourage women to find the creativity that maybe they had when they were a kid, but had to put it to the side because of the creation of children and the nurturing of offspring, and that the kidneys thrive in creativity. And that is built and can mean so many different things, and that it's just a time to harness that different aspect that's just waiting for us to bring it to life.
Absolutely. And that's what I love about the language too of, you know, heavenly water and second spring. Like, I think if we use this language that feels kind of exciting versus, you know, some terms that maybe have already a lot of cultural context around them. So like use, you know, like I'm in my second spring, or I am, you know, there's such importance in the language that we use, because that it will affect our symptoms, you know? So
100%. Yeah. Yep. We got to engage the brain to help the body too. Ashley, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh,
this is going to be
you. This was fun. Yeah.
So helpful for so many women. Thank you. You'll definitely be back. If you want more information on Ashley, her website and contact information will be in the show notes. Reach out to her if you're in the North Carolina area, and she'll be back. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.